Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Before Jill Lexton says, let me say, I'm sure glad she took me to work today. Tom, I think you have, I don't know, I was just out at Starbucks headquarters, and I think you got the double jolt in the morning here. I don't know, man. But by the way, he's that way at midnight, too. And that's why I love working with him on the work he and I are doing about jobs for the future. But Valerie, thank you, kiddo. You've been a great, great friend to me personally, but you've also, you and Tina, have never let up on this subject. You have, from the moment we took office, been focusing on and it matters. It matters a great, great, great deal. And Neera, you do an incredible job at CAP, but you do an incredible job of everything you touch, and it's a pleasure to work with you. Look, let me begin by stating the obvious. Sometimes it's not always so obvious. Every single circumstance is different. Every one of you in this audience has a different circumstance, different opportunity, different problems. How many of you have children out there? Raise your hand. Okay. In every one of your cases, there are different pressures. They're not all the same. They're not all the same. And the fact is that the fact that you're here, the vast majority of you, you're among the lucky ones. Like Jill and I, you're among those who are educated. You're among those who have options, mostly. You're the ones who generally make enough money that you can get some help in caring for your children or your parents. Even if you don't have the salary to do that, you're the ones that know your way around. You know the existence of programs to help your elderly parents or your children. You're the ones in your communities who have we're not going to speak about it much today as I looked at the agenda, but for example, there's a whole lot of things that are going on and we've been working on for, in my case, for over 35 years to ameliorate the pressure on families. And that is, everything from after-school programs. They make a gigantic difference. It's a government program. But when mom and dad, no. I mean, we have millions of turnkey children going home after school, no one there, 3 o'clock, 3:30, in circumstances sometimes that are not always, they're either, I was raised in the grade school by the nuns, they say, temptation. Well, I don't care how good your child is, but a 12-year-old going home and turning on the key to get in the house, even in a safe neighborhood, it's still a concern. And so there's a whole lot of things we are not going to be talking in detail about. But the vast majority of single moms, and I might add dads, don't have these opportunities. Each one of you here, if you're honest, and you all are honest, you know, I mean this sincerely, you know how difficult it is to do your job, advance in your job, and be the parent or caregiver for your parents that you want to be. You've been raised, 99% of you, with the notion that your first and foremost obligation is to your family. Whether it's your parents in distress or your children. And it's really difficult. A lot has to do with the personal choices that we make as to how we allocate our time versus relative to our careers. I don't think anyone participating here makes any moral judgments about any of the choices people make as long as they're conscious choices with real opportunities. And our job, it seems to me, to provide as many opportunities so that the choices that are always going to be difficult, the choices that have to be made are at least more rational. At least there are more options. But there are a lot of factors and a lot of players that can have a significant ameliorating impact on the difficult choices women primarily, but men also have to make in raising their children. If you have, do you have an extended family that can help you? Well, that's a big factor. Can you afford safe and nurturing daycare? What organizations outside, including your school, outside your school, are available in your community, from the YWCA to boys clubs and girls clubs to... No, you, by the way, we owe you. You do an incredible... I spent the bulk of my career chairing the Judiciary Committee. There's an absolute direct correlation between children getting in trouble and having access to boys and girls clubs, YWCAs, YMCAs. It matters. You got to give children choices. Children basically want... Children basically want to do the right thing, but the peer pressure is overwhelming. Sometimes they need an escape. They need an excuse when mom or dad are not present. But look, you all know all of these things. But one of the factors we're talking about today is also that can be incredibly ameliorating. It is not just the policies, but how understanding is your employer? How understanding? You know, lastly, what if anything, can the federal government do to help? And I say lastly, because all these other things that are out there in the community, if they're working really well, including your employers, is less need. Now, there's need for minimum wage. There's need for a whole range of things you discuss, and equal pay, and things we've been working on our whole careers. But there's an awful lot that can be done just to change the atmosphere. The examples Jill gave. You know, you're going to get to discuss all of these things today and more, but if you excuse, as we used to say in the Senate, a point of personal privilege, I can speak a little bit from my own experience. Now, the first thing I was going to say is, look at Biden, man. He's got a mildly expensive suit on. He's Vice President of the United States of America. He makes, notwithstanding he's listed as the poorest man in Congress, he still makes a lot of money as Vice President of the United States, and I do, by the way. I do. Don't hold it against me that I don't own a single stock or bond. Don't hold it. I have no savings account. But I get a great pension and I get a good salary. And for real. Sometimes we talk about this stuff about struggle. My struggle, my God, compared to where I grew up and the way people are trying to go through things now. But here's the point I want to make. I've been really, really fortunate. And Jill is a community college professor. She's seen the struggle of working parents trying to secure an education while earning a living and raising a family, and many times being the victim of domestic violence in the process. And as a military mom, and through the great work she and the First Lady have been doing in joining forces, she knows the stress on military families face, and they struggle through multiple deployments, caring for returning veterans, coping with financial and emotional pressures. These are real. And, you know, she knows what you know, that no family's alike, no struggle is the same, no opportunities are identical. But all families, whether they're headed by two parents or a single mom or a single dad, share the same basic dreams and same goals for themselves and for their children. We can't equalize it all, but we sure in heck can do a lot better. And so I want to support — they want to support their families. They want to feel comfortable. They want to feel safe. They want to be in a secure home and a secure neighborhood. They want to send their kids to college. They want to care for their mom and dad if they have to, and put aside just a little bit, and maybe not enough for their own retirement. They want to achieve these goals without having to sacrifice all of the moments that really matter. My generation, and obviously I'm a lot older than you can see that, But all kidding aside, in my generation, as I was getting in college, coming out of college in the late 60s, it was, it's not quantity time, it's quality time. Give me a break. Give me a break. There's not one important thing my sons or daughter have said to me that came about and said, no, we have quality time. Let's go fishing. Let's discuss this. And as parents, you know that to be the truth. The most incredible things your children say to you, ask of you, reveal to you, are in those moments that you don't anticipate. Moments that occur when you're reading them a story at night, when you get home and you climb in bed with them, even though they're already asleep, and you pet them. No. One of the great memories of my daughter, who's a grown woman and a social worker, as I'd stroke her hair, she says, Daddy, you know what I miss most? Is how you used to smell coming home from work lying down in bed with me. You know what I'm talking about. They're the things that matter, for God's sake. But not all of us have the kind of flexibility that I had. Not all of us had the opportunity. Not all of us had that outside help. You know, there's no substitute for being there. No amount of compensation can replace being physically, emotionally, or mentally present when your child needs you. But we all know there's going to be those times when we're not going to be there. It's just a fact of life. When I lost my wife and daughter in a car accident shortly after I got elected, before I was sworn into the United States Senate, I had a whole heck of a lot of help. I've got an incredible family. My sister's the origin of a phrase in our family. If you have to ask, it's too late. And I mean that sincerely. If you have to ask, it's too late. So I came home from the hospital, and my sister had already moved into my home, given up her — no, with her husband. Gave up his job. No, I'm serious. Who has that? Who has that kind of help? My mother was nearby. My brothers. They all helped me raise my children. But I was a single father for 5 years. And I want to tell you, with all the help I had, and I was making a good salary. I was a U.S. senator. I was making a salary a lot more than the average. I was making $42,000 a year. And that was then. No. The average salary was closer to $19,000. So I was doing well, and I had all this help. And then the overwhelming goodwill of an entire state to wrap their arms around me and my children. And I used to think to myself, I give you my words, I used to think to myself, I have a secretary in Delaware who had 3 children and is single, and her child's going to be held to the exact same standard mine is. The exact same standard under the law. And how in God's name could she do what I was able to do? And I was finding it hard, really hard. But I got lucky. I still had to find my way to be there with my boys. My son Hunter was 3. My son Bo was 4. Still in a full body cast, both arms, both legs, all the way up to his neck. And when I'd leave for Washington, every day I could almost hear the fear in their voices. Are you going, Daddy? They wanted to know as I was coming back. They wanted to know, is everything going to be okay? So to demonstrate to them, but not really, because I needed them, I made a point to start. I thought I was only going to stay for 6 months, start to commute back and forth every day. 8,000 round trips later, not a joke. 8,000. No, really and truly, that, by the way, it was I needed to do that. I needed to do that just for me. They helped raise me as much as I helped raise them. But here's the point. You know what I found out, and employers can help in this, that it really matters that even if it's only like I'd get home at night and after 5 years, no man deserves one great love, let alone two. And 5 years later, when Jill came along and basically saved all of our lives, what happened was, I'd come home, and I used to get home late, not real late. I'd get home by usually 8 o'clock. And she'd keep the boys up, and they'd have their dessert while I had my dinner. And I know that's not, Michelle would not like giving them a dessert. but it was healthy dessert. It was healthy dessert. And look, you do it. You go up and you lie in bed with them. We get whatever your tradition is. In my case, we'd say prayers, like my Grandpa Finnegan did with me. And they would, and they're the things they remember. When they woke up in the morning, it was no Ozzie and Harriet. All in the family kind of stuff where we all sat and had breakfast together. But while I was shaving, they'd come in and have whatever's on their mind for that day. We'd go downstairs, and while I'm having a cup of coffee, they're eating their breakfast. Because young kids can only hold an important idea for about 12 hours. No, for real. You miss it, it's gone. You miss it, it's gone. And it matters to them and to you. Look, nothing was more important to me than being able to be there. But I had this overwhelming luxury. I didn't have any one boss. I had a million people in Delaware who were my boss. And they were pretty understanding. No, I sincerely mean it. I missed my first 6 years. I was one of the lowest percentages of people voting. I had an 87%, I think that's what it was, voting record. I never missed a vote that was a deciding vote. And most were procedural votes. So everybody said, they came up with all these explanations. The other team was doing the right thing. They were attacking me on TV, which made sense, saying, would you hire a man who only showed up 87% of the time, et cetera. And so I, over the advice of and I tell you this to tell you what I think about how people think. Over the advice of the experts, I did one ad. I looked into the camera and I said, look, it's true. I missed whatever it was, 13, 15% of the votes. And if you elect me again, I will do it again. No, I'm serious. And I said, because I will never miss a vote to make a difference. But if I have a choice between a procedural vote and my child's parent-teacher's meeting, I'm going to the meeting. But here's the point. It's not about me. Look at the luxury I had. How many of you would like to be able to do that? I'm no different than any one of you, for real. I'm not trying to say this is, oh, Joe Biden, he did the good. No, I had the ability to do it. You all want to do it. And I could make a choice. And I was confident the people in my state would understand, because I was confident. And the reason I tell you the story is I think that's how almost every American thinks. They think if they could, they only could. If they only could, they would. So, folks, look. The fact of the matter is, there are too many people where it comes down to making a choice between doing that parent-teachers meeting or going to that championship game or showing up at that debate or being there just when your child is sick, having to choose between doing that and their job. Not one time. But like many of you, my family's been an incredible consumer of healthcare costs. My sons were critically injured. My daughter had a subluxor vertebrae in traction for a long time, both Jill and I teaching. But we had the option. We could choose who could stay home. I could operate from my home, assuming there weren't a critical vote. But the point is, those kind of choices, most times it comes down to not losing your job or not. It comes down to the subtle things. It's about, if I don't stay and help finish the project and not go to my daughter's parents' night, they're going to think I don't really want to work hard. They're going to think I really don't care about my job. So damn it. No, your employer's not demanding to do it. But if I don't stay, I have some really incredible people work for me over the years. I forget one time we counted. I've had something like 25 Rhodes Scholars, more Marshall Scholars, people. I had a law firm of 65 people as chairman of the Judiciary Committee. Almost everyone graduating in the top 5% of their class. Really smart people. Ambitious people. I remember during the really difficult hearing, a hearing having to do with that I was conducting on the Supreme Court, and a very controversial hearing, Judge Bork. And the young man who and I'm not going to mention his name, one of the young men who had done most of the research in the background on Judge Bork, the hearing, and he was having difficulty at home. He was having difficulty because he was spending so little time at home for the previous 6 months in preparation. He's having difficulty in his marriage. And the day the hearing started, fortunately, I have a guy named Ron Klain, who was my chief of staff, was a wonderful guy, came to me and said, so-and-so has a problem. I said, tell him if he comes into work, he's fired. Not a joke. Not a joke. That wasn't being noble. Wasn't being noble. It was the right thing to do. But beyond that, he was important. He could do it from home. He could be on the phone. He could let us know. And he had to be assured, though, that it would not affect his advancement. That's all employers have to do sometimes, is to let you know that these subtle choices, they don't have to have some massive policy, particularly if they're smaller. Look, no one, and the other piece about what Jill pointed about trust. You know, folks, we make such a mistake, I think, sometimes, because I don't know, I'm not quite sure why. But guess what? Trust is usually returned. Trust is really usually returned. I have a policy. I just hired on three very high-profile people. The first thing I sat with them when I hired them, I said, look, here's the deal. If you ever have any problem at home, no matter what it is, you don't have to tell me what it is, because sometimes it's embarrassing. My child has a drug problem. I'm taking him to a counselor. Vast majority of parents face that. I'm having difficulty. My wife is having, and I are having a problem. My father is. You don't have to give me an explanation. Just say, look, I need the time. I need the time. No explanation. You have no idea. I guess you do have an idea. How much, not only is it the right thing to do, but how much loyalty that engenders. How much response you get. And by the way, to those of your employers, the corporate folks out there, you know when it's being abused. You don't need a roadmap. You know if that is really abused. And so it's a lot easier to trust. People don't abuse trust if you really trust them, by and large. And though these are the things that I think all employers can do. Now, it's true that many times problems are much bigger. Company-wide policies have to be made, decisions on flexible schedules, expanded leave policies, telecommuting, and job training and education, on-the-job training and education. These are all points you're going to discuss in some detail today. I wish I could stay. I really do. I wish I could stay and be in this conference. So the point I want to make today is that all the corporate executives and business owners in this room, it's about creating policies that allow your worker to balance family and work, and it's never going to be an absolute balance, but in a way that's better for them. If you give it a shot, I think you'll find the return is overwhelming. When I was chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, a woman named, I mentioned this because in the book Lean In, her name is mentioned. She's still a great friend of mine, and I know that Valerie knows her well. Cynthia Hogan, a really first-rate lawyer. She was my chief counsel, and she was with me a long time, and she's one of the reasons why we were able to successfully pass the Violence Against Women Act. And before she left in 1996, when her first child was born, and as Sheryl Sandberg described in her book, Lean In, when I asked Cynthia to return, when I became vice president as my chief counsel at the White House, she was concerned that she wouldn't be able to continue to have time for her family. Now, teenagers a little bit older. So we worked it out. We found a way to give her time and flexibility she needed, benefiting from her experience and her talents, which were badly needed. As her employer, I benefited just as much as she did. She left by a certain time so she could be home. It wasn't a hard thing. There was no loss of productivity in my office. I mean, I would have taken Cynthia for 5 hours a day. But the point is, she was able to do it from home. So when the kids walked through the door, which was important to her, that she was there. She was in connection with the office. And we made a rule. No matter how important it was, she didn't get any text message during dinner. Because it was an important time. Important time. Look, here's the deal. You all know it. Study after study confirms my experience. Family-friendly policies reduce turnover, they boost performance, and they boost productivity. And speaking to Cynthia and some of the other women in my shop with children, they're the reason I was able to write the domestic violence law in the first place. And I can't leave. And the good news for you is I'm about to leave, but I can't leave without saying something about the Violence Against Women Act. You know, nearly one-third of the victims of domestic violence lose their jobs because of the impacts on their employers. And there are real impacts on their employers. What happens in the workplace? An abuser coming into the workplace, disrupting, you know, breaking out the windows of the car in the parking lot, you know, flattening the tires, threatening coworkers. It happens. And so you can, on one hand, understand why employers, particularly in big operations, say, well, we don't need this. We don't need this. It's disruptive. But the total cost to the economy, or the cost to the economy, according to the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, is about, they can list, about $8 billion in lost productivity in healthcare. That's not the total cost to the whole economy, which is much higher. And employers can, and many are. I was going to list them, but my staff says don't go listing the ones because you'll leave somebody out. And you can know I always listen to my staff. But all kidding aside, a number of major companies are making a big difference because they've developed policies to help the victims keep their jobs and stay safe. It takes effort on the part of the company. But I would urge you at another time, not this, not part of your discussion today, but I think you cannot talk about opportunity for women unless you talk about dealing with, in the work environment, the violence against them that occurs, the domestic violence. But I hope you employers will take a look at some of your fellow companies who've done in providing a permissive environment for victims against domestic violence. You're going to hear a lot more today, and I know many of you are already putting these policies in place. So I want to close by thanking you all here, thanking you for everything you do for working families in your companies and your communities in your country. And like I said, we may need broad policies, and I think we do, and you'll talk about them. But an awful lot of this can be done just by subtle but nonetheless significant understanding of the circumstance that particularly single moms and some single dads have to deal with. Thank you for caring so much about our kids. Thank you for caring so much about being able to make sure that particularly women have the opportunity to meet their potential and every one of their expectations. God bless you all. May God protect our troops. Thank you.